This podcast is offered by Jikoji Zen Center on the web at jikoji.org. Our programs are made possible by donations from people like you.
Enjoy fishing, and we'll be gathering, or we are gathering now to honor, respect, remember Buddha's birthday. And I have a deep, deep gratitude for what's been passed down from him. And I don't know that, you know, I don't know that Western psychology would have touched it for me. So without this mixture. So we know that, you know, Buddha was born into relative wealth and privilege for his time. One thing that's sort of not discussed too much, at least in my experience, is that his mother died right after his birth. And from our perspective today, that's trauma on that little being, because I'm an adoptive parent, and I understand that split at birth, that separation. The child, no matter how young, knows it, experiences it. And I haven't really, the only person I know I've come across that spent any time with that is Mark Epstein. I can't remember the name of the book, but one of his books, he goes into that. And so I wonder, you know, if that hadn't happened, you know, you think about causes and conditions, right? Now he, one of his father's advisors said that Buddha could, you know, this child was destined to either become a great ruler or a great spiritual leader. And so there's this potential in both, right? And then it was how he saw later on as a still a young person, you know, he saw suffering, old age, and death. And he began, how do I cope with that? Would it have landed on him the same way if there hadn't been that early trauma, I wonder? Just, you know, not in mind wondering, that's all. And which sent him out on his quest. And he studied with two yoga masters and realized those teachings. But as I said earlier, he realized that when he was not in that state of oneness or whatever it was that he experienced in that practice, he was back to the beginning in his quest. And I said that, you know, that he came to this, this realization, looking into this human being, how the human being functions. And that's what happened under the Bodhi tree. Understanding, seeing into how the human functions, how the human causes itself suffering, in addition to the existential suffering that we experience in life through the five aggregates: form, feelings, perceptions, impulses, and consciousness. Underneath that, though, is what we've been touching on, is dependent origination, the middle way. This first, I mean, they're all repeats of different versions. This is what my longtime teacher, Diane Martin, who ordained me as a priest, this is her hand drawings of the wheel. You know, she called it the wheel of life and death. And then Oh. And then in that sangha, one of her people who received lay transmission from her on the second page is more of a bare bones thing. Beth Jacobs. Beth Jacobs, who wrote the book Abhidharma, the Original Buddhist Psychology, who happens to be a psychologist therapist. And then Diane, she was really big on this. She still probably is. I haven't talked to her about it for a while. But she had this big framed thing that hung in the classroom at the Zen Center. And for a while she had groups out east. She had groups in Louisiana, groups in Ohio. And she would take this big thing around with her. I'll share a smaller version. Bhikkhu Bodhi says, in the Theravada Buddhist tradition, the Maha Nidana Sutta is regarded as one of the profoundest discourses spoken by the Buddha. Its principal theme is paticca-samuppada, dependent arising, and that immediately alerts us to its importance. For the Pali Canon makes it quite plain that dependent arising is not merely one strand of doctrine among others, but the radical insight at the heart of Buddha's teachings, the insight from which everything else unfolds. For the Buddha himself, during his period of struggle for enlightenment, dependent arising came as the astonishing, eye-opening discovery that ended his groping in the dark. Quoting him, arising, arising, thus bhikkhus, in regard to things unheard before, there arose in me vision, knowledge, wisdom, understanding, and light. A series of suttas show the same discovery to be the essence of each Buddha's attainment of enlightenment. Once enlightened, the mission of a Tathagata, a perfect one, is to proclaim dependent arising to the world. So often does the Buddha do this in discourse after discourse that dependent arising soon becomes regarded as a quintessence of his teachings. So this wheel of life and death. The scary figure here is in the Tibetan tradition, Yama, the Lord of Death. It's got this grip, it's got everything in its grip. And so we can start with the first link. And if you know these images, so the first link, is this one right here, ignorance, right down here. Sort of somebody wandering lost in confusion. And so the way this is usually presented is ignorance being a condition, therefore arises formations. Formations being our habit patterns, our wired-in conditioning that we've been talking about. Formations being a condition for existence, then consciousness arises. And from consciousness, name and form, it's the body That's the body and mind. And from name and form, the six senses. From the six senses, contact. From contact, feeling, remember, pleasant, unpleasant, or neither. And from feeling, thirst or craving. And then from craving, grasping, and grasping, becoming, becoming, birth, and then old age and death, and then on it, and then the next round of ignorance. So the more traditional teaching of this is how we stay stuck in cycles of samsara. From one life existence to another. So let's go to the very middle of the hub. There are no words there, so you have to trust me on this one. In that hub, you see those three arrows going around: greed, hate, and delusion. Okay. And then the other arrows are, you know, in the second round there is a sense, are we ascending or descending? Are we ascending or descending in our practice? We come back to the Bodhidharma line, right? The mind, using the mind to determine.
Is that a fit, you say?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, then we have the six realms. Then we can land in the animal realm, you know, the animal realm, the hell realms, the hungry ghost realms. You see that the hungry ghost realms, they're these figures. They've got these elongated necks. Their mouths are open and they just can't get enough. And what does come in, it comes back out. Just can't get enough, not good enough, whatever. And then the Titan realms, as I've learned it, is kind of the angry god realms. Kind of the super ego dynamic, you know, the sort of, you know, controlling, you know, bossy type thing, you know. And then the heaven realm, you know, it seems like, you know, the bliss realm, but it also can be just, you know, that type of, it's a bliss realm, you know, and it's without the substance, if you will. And then the human realm. The areas of transmigration that we can land in. Now I look at this as a therapist. I've always looked at this, because you know, I've always looked at this and I go, okay, ignorance formations, okay, but consciousness, okay, we're going to stop consciousness. You know, I get it that the, what, you know, this, we're, you know, stop the end the cycle of samsara, I get all of that, but it's the human functioning here. It's the five aggregates in more detail. Oh, these beings out there, they're outside the clutch. Mm-hmm. Sort of, you know, we were talking about equanimity, those, they're outside the clutch, the liberated one. So, you know, I look at this as the seeing clearly into the pattern of reification of our patterns. Okay, going back, so you know, we might focus, for instance, on ignorance formations, thirst, and grasping, because that's where, you know, especially for foundation or formations, that's where the karmic is, you know, that's what those two areas, that's the propellant makes this thing go. Are there any questions so far?
Are the hell realms connected to grasping them?
They can be. So you can use this to sort of chart yourself. Okay. So you can say, okay, if you may be in hell, you know, you may sense, okay, you get familiar with your hell realms. Okay. How you cause yourself hell. You may get familiar with your animal realm. It's just the, you know, being a creature, an animal. And so you learn to spot where you are, and then you learn to connect where you are on the wheel. Yes.
What does it mean, the hungry ghost realm and the chitons? What does it mean, the
hungry ghost,
wandering empty realm and the chiton realm?
Wandering empty hungry ghost realm. I don't know what Diane meant by that, but it's, I can't remember now, but it's the hungry ghost realm is, it's, you know, it is wandering, and it is, you know, it's, you know, there's sort of that aspect in ignorance too, loss, a sense of, you know, just being in confusion and not seeing your own hunger patterns, the hungry ghost dynamics in it.
Oh.
Yeah.
I have a question. So in the Western or more modern Buddhism, where you're practicing or learning, is the six realms is a reincarnation, or it's more like a metaphor to understand where we are?
Could be both. It could be both. More like a, you know, I see it as a metaphor. Actually, I don't see it as a metaphor, because we have these patterns. So when we're thinking about formations, right? Our habit patterns, our conditioned patterns, we can see these as conditioned patterns. Okay. And it's the language from back then that they use. But it works for me. Especially, you know, in my, you know, my, you know, I, the hungry, you know, I can, I, you know, the for me, it'd be hell realms, hungry ghosts, and titans. You know, would be my tendencies.
I was reading the book about the remembering Colvin earlier this morning, and I think Eric asked a question and asked Colvin, say, is God and Buddha the same thing? And Colvin's answer is yes. Well, I'm just looking at the heaven realm, considering Christianity, there's also a heaven.
Don't confuse that. Okay. The heaven, it's, you know, it's sort of like, okay, you know, I've reached this attainment. Okay, the striving for attainment, and I've reached this spiritual development. Okay. It's more like that. And it's not necessarily so bad. It's, I just reached this, you know, the Buddha reached that spiritual attainment. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah.
But Leva was asking about the Titans.
Oh, the Titans. Well, have you ever, I don't see the Titan in you, but you know, it's sort of, you know, the, you know, when we talk about the super ego, do you have a sense what the super ego is?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got the ego and super ego, you know. Well, the super ego is really, you know, it's really controlling. It's sort of our angry inner boss, you know, it's kind of rigid. So when you experience in yourself this rigid thing to control, it's got to be right. Okay. Or you experience it in others. We're all Buddhist here, so we don't have it, right? But you know, it's that, you know, when you experience it, you feel the rigidity of it. I've experienced it in Zen centers. Yeah. For the San Francisco sense.
It's this way. This is the way.
And so it's an interesting thing to work with. I invite you to do that. And so, you know, my early hearing of middle way had to do with coming back to Buddha. And he almost starved himself to death. And this extreme asceticism. And so, and then he realized he had this memory and insight of being a little boy and sitting under this tree in the shade at the harvest festival and watching his father and the community participate in the harvest festival. And he remembered the joy he experienced from them. Not some conditioned joy, it's just joy. And he goes, well, there's nothing wrong with that joy. And he goes, oh, okay, the teaching that I was hearing, it was, and we hear that, you know, the middle way between the extremes. And then, you know, in his teaching about not too tight, not too loose. We can remember that, I think, in our practice. Not too tight, not too loose. And how do you begin to gauge that? And how we are with each other. Not too tight, not too loose. But it goes further. It really woke me up when I just came across this and I made these little laminated cards for everybody in my Zen Center. And they were looking at me and they were going, the Paticca Sammuppada. This existing that exists, this arising that arises, this not existing that no longer exists, this ceasing that ceases. It just opened right up for me. Because it takes in this. This is dependent. This is dependent origination, dependent arising in this wheel, in us. The manifest, you know, the dynamics of dependent origination. It's the five aggregates in motion, you know, trying to capture the dynamics of human being, of human, you know, the human functions. And then it goes, you know, just exploded. We talk about systems theory. We talk about being alive in system. You know, this is just always going on. We can't, you know, there's no way of knowing all of it. And I'm conscious of time, but I'll touch on it and come back to it this afternoon. Is, you know, for me, come back to that word ignorance. You know, so now there is, you know, when I study the self, in the study of self, is what do I, and with as much honesty as I can, is what do I uncover? Okay. Like I say, I'm a white guy, you know, I made a mistake one time. I was working with some people of color on the south side of Chicago, and, you know, people who'd been released from prison. And I'd come to be pretty good friends with one of them, and he invited me into his house, and I made a comment that I'm a redneck from Central Illinois. That was it. Boom! It was just immediate, the cutoff. But I came from redneck country. That's my roots. The people where I come from wear red hats mostly. In Illinois, most of it is red. except for Chicago area. That's the way it is. And so you can imagine my conditioning, right? You know, for some reason, there was my mother, thank goodness, she kept putting this idea of college. I had no idea. In my background, nobody had gone to college except for one. And what that did and what that opened up, what that all changed. And then moving to Chicago, you know, my wife and I, we were going to a play, which is kind of like a musical. There was music in this. And I was just, I was blown away. It was like, you know, I leaned over to my wife and I said, God, I'm glad we moved north. Because on the stage, the men and women of all of these talents, they acted, they played musical instruments, and they sang. It was amazing. You know, just appreciating the human, what humans, the beauty of humans, right? And so I live in Lake County. Lake County is diverse, but pretty segregated in many ways. The town I live in is not so segregated. But still, I come here and like in the Sunday morning meditation group, I go, I'm looking around me and I'm just going, oh man, it warms my heart. Whenever, you know, to have that, have the system cracked open. And so there's, when we're talking about ignorance, working with ignorance, it's how do we help that system crack open? How do we continue to work with our ignorance?
Can I ask a question?
Mm-hmm.
So what's the ignorance here mean? Does that mean you are not aware of your conditioning?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we just don't, you know, we may have some idea, but not completely. And what we tend to do is resist. We'll go into that more tomorrow. But what we continue, what we do, the system resists taking in something new, new perspectives. And it sort of works with blinders on. It stays with what's familiar. Okay. And like I said, you know, we can repress, and what we repress comes back at us, as Andrew Holacek said. It comes back in many different ways, and it is controlling what we're doing. And so we're acting blindly. You know, these karmic formations, these volitions, are just acting blindly. That's just the way it is. And so then I come back to, we'll stop here for right now, but I come back to this dynamic. You know, how do we dance in this? And so it's no longer just a matter of extremes, you know, too much of this or too much of that. It becomes more fluid, dynamic. So by and large, Kachana, this world relies on the duality of it is and it is not. But one who sees the arising of the world as it happens with complete understanding has no sense of it is not about the world. And one who sees the ceasing of the world as it happens with complete understanding has no sense of it is about the world. And that's always going on in us. We're ising and is notting. Always.
Mm-hmm.
Luke, you're this way. Or you're not that way. You know, in the mind. Tesla, you know, Tesla's good, bad,
mm-hmm.
right? And we'll open up Tesla's a little bit more. We'll look under their so-called good. But it, you know, it's that dynamic. You know, how do we dance? And this practice really, oh man, I can't describe it. It loosens us up to be in the dance. One of the first things that came to me in my in practice was of being born on a dance floor. The music is always changing, the style of music, the rhythm and partners, it's all changing with no warning. That's my sense of dependent origination. You know, if you're into jazz and you're into live jazz, you're watching these people read each other, you know. But you know, it's that read without words getting in the way, without our conditioned patterns getting in the way. It's how do we dance? And you know, I was during Kenyon this morning, I was watching Jerome working in the garden. And Jerome, you know, so he you know, over the years he gets, you know, he just the quiet tending to this garden, causes and conditions. Maybe that's not working. Maybe I'll try something else. Just attending to cause, amidst the causes of condition, and it's always changing. Right? And he reads that hill up there, you know, that's just above Giroux's waterfall, Giroux's falls, and just studying that hill. It's that kind of tending to, it's always changing. And watching what the mind does in this, because the mind is always freeze framing in its habit pattern. So, you know, it's loosey-goosey, man. It's, you know, this practice, it gets livelier and livelier. And your sitting should be getting pretty lively. I said, shit, I'm sorry. My hope is that it does.
Thank you for listening to this podcast offered by Jokoji Zen Center. Our Dharma talks are offered free of charge, and this is made possible by the donations we receive. Your support helps us to continue to offer the Dharma. For more information about Jokoji, please visit us on the web at jokoji.org.